welcome to Gang Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And we are excited for yet another week. Now, we do record in Ottawa, and of course, our...
Good news, despite the fact that somewhere between 2 and 6 tornadoes touched down...
Yeah, at least, there are 3 now, I think.
They're still not... Well, the third one could have just been a high downwards force microburst that patterns like a tornado, but it may not have been a funnel. Still, there is destruction. So anyway, there's between 2 and 6 tornadoes, and miraculously, nobody died.
Yeah.
And I think there's like 2 injuries, and they were kind of...
Oh, I think they're closer to 30-odd now, but it's...
No, 2 serious injuries that involved like stick them in an ambulance and run them off, and the others, like the ambulance showed up like, we can deal with that here. Yeah. So there was a... It wasn't that bad in the grand scheme of things. So,
I mean, there was a story. They interviewed a guy who's in an apartment building, and it took the whole top of the apartment building off.
Mm-hmm.
The roof is no longer there.
Right.
And apparently the guy was there with his little girl, and she was like being sucked into the tornado, and he was holding on to her, trying to keep her like not in the tornado.
I see.
Yeah. And the guy was just bawling in the interview, and it's like, I mean, that must have been terrifying.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrifying.
And I think this plays to the fact that my brain goes to nerd land when things like this happen. Because I was looking at all the videos of all the destruction and the results of all that, all I could think was Canadians have terrible building practices.
I was thinking that as well. I was like, if they put a bit of brick in any of these houses,
right?
It would have been fine. They're all made out of plywood and a bit of fluff. It's just, it's bizarre.
That's a weird thing to think. But yeah, no. And also,
you know, people say tornado warning, high winds. We get these alerts all the time.
We really do, anything of it.
And then we said to our neighbors, oh, we're going camping.
Yeah.
And our older neighbor was like, oh, are you sure? Because, you know, there's a tornado warning.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll put a few extra pegs around the tent. Yeah. We'll be fine.
Well, this was the, I think, 7th storm since I've moved to Ottawa that had a tornado warning attached to it. And this is the 2nd one where a tornado actually touched down. And the first one... they suspected a tornado touchdown, and they couldn't prove it. And then 3 weeks later, there's a farmer who discovered that his corn was all messed up. And they're like, oh, I guess so, eh? Which is, that's what they actually think is going to happen. So the weather conditions were appropriate for 6 tornadoes, but only 3 of them were confirmed. And what's probably going to happen is over the next few weeks, farmers are just going to be, because it's harvest season.
Yeah.
They're going to be pulling in the sweet corn. They're going to be pulling up the potatoes. They're going to be, you know, plowing, what's the thing? Plowing under... The thing where you turn the soil and you, I don't know, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Probably. Then they're just going to be like, there is a long line of messed up crop going from here to there. So, yeah.
But we're gonna move on from talking about the great Ottawa tornado of 2018.
Right. Well, it actually was, though. Unlike, what was it, the great Toronto earthquake of, I think, 2016, where they basically evacuated the city and, like, happened?
The great sinkhole of 2016, where one car got swallowed up. I mean, it's...
Oh, I felt really bad for that guy, though.
I was telling a friend of mine, actually, whilst we were camping, and it was the day after, and I said, it reminds me of the big panic in London in the UK over an epic storm. And everyone had been bigging up this storm for like the whole week. And the winds came and deck chairs were cast asunder. Gnomes were toppled from their glory. And then people were just Instagramming and putting on Facebook and hashtagging on Twitter just pictures of slightly disheveled garden furniture. And tagging it the Great Storm.
The thing is that knowing Brits, it was probably really hard to tell between people being overdramatic and people being sarcastic. It was probably indistinguishable.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been 50-50, really.
It could have probably.
So then I was thinking that a couple of deck chairs will be knocked over. Well, no, there was actually really significant damage in Ottawa. If you have a way of practically helping some of these folks, we know, for example, that the food banks in the city of Ottawa... Yeah. In significant need of support, because of course all of these families are in need and they'd sort of emptied a lot of them out.
Well, even more so, one of the tornadoes plowed through a power relay station.
Well, so I'm not suggesting we donate to the hydro companies.
Well, no.
They charge us enough money already.
There's been a run on the food banks because a quarter of the city, 3 days later, still doesn't have power.
Probably won't have power.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's been grocery stores all over the city have been emptied out because...
I thought you were going to suggest that we donate to hydro companies.
No, and I certainly don't recommend you donate to the Loblaws institution either, of which there's now like, they bought Farm Boy as well, apparently.
No, Sobeys.
Sobeys bought Farm Boy as well. It's just,
For folks outside of Ottawa and Ontario, there are other ways to donate. And, you know, it's always good to donate locally as well.
Yeah.
You never know when something like this is going to happen in your backyard.
And things like food banks are very practical, and they're feet on the ground, and they make a difference the day you donate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about what is actually quite an interesting blog piece. Now, we don't often talk about blog pieces, but this is a blog piece that got posted in the Pride Report, which I think is great. And it's from Moose Jaw Pride. But what's interesting is that the Pride Report from Moose Jaw Pride had a story in there about a gentleman called Pavan, P-A-V-A-N, and he is actually from India.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he came to Canada, and it's a really great blog piece. We're sharing it on our website, www.canqueer.news. You should check it out. It's a great read. But what he talks about is how in India, it was unacceptable to be gay. For example, his family members were telling them to remove them from his Facebook because he was being too gay.
Yeah.
You know, and even though he's exploring his sexuality and the safety of Canada, it still wasn't entirely okay. His mother came to see him for 3 months, which is funny because this is the sort of thing that Jake has told me that his Vietnamese mother might do, would like just show up and decide to live with him for 2 months. But Pavan's mother did that, was feeding him holy water, trying to exorcise the demon. Apparently things in the family relationship aren't so dire. But what's... The blog piece ends on a really hopeful note about the fact that now if Pavan goes back to see family and to see friends, he's not going to be arrested for just being gay.
Right.
Now people in India are starting to have a conversation about homosexuality, that now he's in a position where, you know, he loves Canada, he loves Saskatchewan, but it's not like he's trapped here now.
Yeah.
There is an option of going to his homeland where, you know, attitudes are slowly changing for the better.
Well,
it's a brilliant read.
It's complicated in general, though. When I lived in Toronto, for some reason, I just fell into a group of bisexual Indian women where just for like a 3-year period, I almost exclusively hang out with bisexual Indians. And something that I heard from all of them is it depends on what city you're from. It depends on what ethno-religious group you belong to. It depends on how modern your family is, that you could have. And then the other things, like half of them, the reason why they moved to Canada, because they had like one Muslim parent and one like Catholic parent or something like that. And they just figured, you know, they would get around the religious conflict by just moving to Canada and both of them not caring anymore. So, but yeah, a lot of them were like, you know, when they visit their aunties or whatever, that it would be depend on what city they were as to whether or not they had to cover their tracks. So, I mean, it's really interesting speaking with people about their experiences in other countries. And the most interesting ones are the answers that involve, you know, it depends. So, you know, is China a gay-friendly country? Well, it depends. You know, is what else have I heard? Egypt? Egypt, it depends. And Egypt has a bad reputation. But then you speak to people from Egypt and they're like, it depends. It's really interesting.
And we're going to talk about some of the other ones. We may or may not get to a bit of an interesting conversation that's happening in Malaysia. I'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to stick to India for a second.
Right, okay.
There was another story that made the rounds, and that was about a lesbian couple. Now, this is kind of ridiculous. This woman called Aruna, she's 24.
Right.
Moved in with her girlfriend who is 40.
Right.
Her parents found out, reported her missing to the police.
Okay.
And then she was arrested by the police and returned to the family.
Arrested for being missing?
Well, like detained.
Okay.
And then Legion was pleased and they took it away.
But when you're 25, you're an adult. So you can just say, no, I'm not missing. I'm right here. I know where I am. And I want to be here. So
yeah. Yeah.
Someone reported me missing.
Well, it goes even further.
Okay. Okay.
So the magistrate who heard the fact that she was detained case said, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
She's free to go.
Oh, so they agreed.
Yeah, basically. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And then she got outside the front door.
Right.
And was immediately manhandled and then kidnapped by her own family.
Okay.
Who promptly put her into the nearest mental institution.
Okay.
Where she then became trapped, as they said that she was mentally insane.
I'm waiting for the happy ending.
Well, her partner, who is 40, sued the government, or sued to the government, claiming that Aruna should have the right to decide where to live.
Right.
And the court actually agreed with the lesbian couple. And Aruna was summoned and asked by the magistrates, where do you want to live? And she said, with her 40-year-old lesbian lover. And that's where she is now. So what's really interesting is that the court said, had it not been for the decriminalization decision last week,
if this had happened,
she would have been, yeah, she would have been left in that mental institution.
So if this had happened like 3 months ago, yeah. Just as you're telling that story, all I could think was that if this was the American version, it would involve a whole lot less court cases and a whole lot more like cocking guns and let's take it. And I actually like this. Actually, this is a movie worthy story. Like, there's something very compelling about it. It's kind of exciting, actually. But it does have a happy ending, and that's the good part. And they're under common law in India, aren't they?
I think so. But yeah, they were together for 2 years.
So this did set. And then
her family tried to detain her. But I think what it means, it's showing, it's demonstrating that, you know, LGBT folks in India are actually getting all of the adjacent rights
that
come with it, you know, not being thrown into a mental institution for just being a lesbian. You know, the fact that being kidnapped because you're gay is apparently, you know, no longer an okay thing in this state in India. So it was really interesting. It was a high court that made that decision.
I just looked it up. India does do English style case law. It did just set a precedent, basically. Like, this is now the new precedent that you are a grown adult, even if you are le homo.
India is still relatively conservative compared to, you know, Denmark, but right, these are rights that are slowly working, and hopefully it means good things for the folks on the ground. But
one step at a time.
How it impacts folks in Canada was a really beautifully summarized in that blog piece by the Pride Report from Moose Jaw Pride.
Right.
So we really appreciate the great work they did in putting that together. Peterborough Pride is one of the last in the season.
Okay.
That's coming up, which is pretty exciting. No, it just happened, sorry.
Right.
I just remembered that I got my dates wrong. So we hope everybody in Peterborough had a great Pride.
My favorite thing. There's not
really that many of them left.
Have you been to Peterborough?
I have. They have a good zoo.
They have a free of entry zoo, and they have llamas, and that's all you need to know about Peterborough. There's other stuff that's true about Peterborough, but they have free llamas. That's what you need to know.
What more do you need?
What free alpacas. I mean, you got to throw in, complete the set.
Absolutely.
Actually, I think they do have alpacas now.
Well.
Capybaras?
Oh my gosh, you're just going through the... Are we sponsored this week by the Peterborough Zoo?
By Cuteness. And this week is brought to you by Cuteness.
And alpacas.
And alpacas and capybaras.
Well, the last story I want to mention today before we move on is I'm not sure if we got round to doing it, but there was a radio host on Rogers.
Right.
At CITI in Winnipeg that was promptly kicked off of his job as a local DJ.
Oh.
And that was because...
How long did he last before they kicked him out?
Well, he was a shock jock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they were talking about Scarlett Johansson's decision to pull out of the film Rub and Tug. Okay. Now, for our listeners' sake, that was a film that featured a trans female character. And the trans community were annoyed that within, like, a days of a previous protest...
Female to male. It was female to male character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And within days of other protests about, white people playing Asian people.
Based on a true story. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was all of this backlash about you know, Asian face and people playing characters that aren't them. And then they announce this big film where a cisgendered white person is playing a trans person. And the trans community are like, okay, come on now. Like, wake up and smell the roses here. Right, like, there's a... Pay attention. And so after a while, a lot of blowback, Scarlett Johansson decided to step down from playing that role. Now, there's an ongoing debate as to whether or not cis people can play trans characters and whether or not straight people can play gay characters.
Right.
But what was really quite controversial is that Wheeler effectively said that trans people are just like actors because they're people pretending to be other things.
Okay.
Yeah, which completely...
Who said this?
He was the radio host in Winnipeg.
Okay.
I heard the clip, and the other hosts were like, oh, okay, and so about that weather, eh, guy? And just, like, promptly shut the conversation down and moved on. But people were kind of insulted that this, like, primetime host thinks that trans people are just there pretending and making it up because they choose to have a suicide rate that's 5 times higher, and they choose to lose their job on the regular with less protections. And of course, people would opt in to all of the health implications that comes with hormone replenishing therapy and various surgeries. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Mm.
But this guy thinks that they're just really good actors pretending to be these trans people. And he lost his job. Anyway, he's suing, seeking lost wages and damages worth 1.4 million Canadian.
Oh, that'll never happen. I mean, just in general, like, lost wages lawsuits in Canada, just in general, don't have a good history. And this doesn't look good. Yeah, no. This is one of those things where you ask for 10, expecting to get half of one. And I don't know that he's going to get that either.
So the part of it was he had a very good career. I only wish I made the kind of money that he made as a radio DJ. By the way, folks, we're entirely volunteer doing this radio show. we get no money whatsoever, which is just sad.
But occasionally we get donations and then you give me a share and I give it right back to you to maintain the website.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
we sometimes have enough money to pay for our website bill.
Yeah.
But no, it's the whole point here was that apparently Rogers hired him as a shock jock and had pumped up his reputation as edgy, uncut, imbalanced, and that the show is supposed to be this sort of rough around the edges. So he's arguing that they can't in one side of their mouth say he's edgy and pushes the envelope, and then when he says something, air quote, edgy, end air quote, although that's not a quote, actually. That's just me referencing a previous statement.
Yeah, yeah.
But when he does say things that they then say, oh, no, that's too far. So that's the grounds he's suing on, is that if they may have set him up to fail.
If they define in his contract that there is such a thing as too far, or if they have a workplace equity policy, then they could just say, you talk like that in the workplace, and the workplace has policies against that, at which point the whole thing would probably fall through.
Well,
being Rogers, I'm sure they have a work...
Rogers said after he was fired, they said that there have been multiple... And I am quoting this time.
Yeah.
There have been multiple disciplinary incidents, and in spite of numerous conversations, he has continued to offend our audience.
Mm.
As a result, we have ended our relationship with him, and he is no longer with the company, effective immediately. This type of behavior contradicts our standards and our core values, where diversity and inclusion are paramount. So Rogers threw the book at him, and this guy takes offense, saying that, you know, I was hired to be out there and edgy.
Right.
You fired me for it. I want all the money.
Historically, shock jocks are crass. They're not offensive. There's a difference. Or they're offensive in the fact that they're crass. So, like, very little of what... what is his name? The famous American shock jock that basically started... Howard Stern. So a lot of what Howard Stern says is not necessarily offensive. He just says inoffensive things offensively. Like, he says it as crassly as possible. I don't know if I can judge him because that's kind of how I speak sometimes. But I also know that there's a difference between saying something banal in the most rude way possible versus being mean about someone I don't even know So, I mean, there's a difference. There's a line.
This is one of the, pretty much the last Canadian story we have here right now, and that is about Canadian Netflix. So somebody on Twitter...
Are they going to start showing Canadian content?
So, you know on Twitter brands...
Because you know that Canadian Netflix doesn't obey CRTC rules.
Oh, well, CRTC CanCon rules don't currently apply to Netflix.
They should!
I know. If you believe so, write your local MP, because they're reviewing the Broadcast Act, and this is when decisions are being made.
Oh, I'm going to double down. Please write your local representative, if that's going to be the case.
You think Netflix should have more CanCon?
Yeah. But,
so somebody tweeted at Netflix Canada, or Netflix underscore CA, and at Netflix.
Okay.
And they said, want to know what I don't get? Why there has to be a difference in Netflix.ca and at Netflix?
Okay.
Now, the real reason is because of TV and movie licensing is done on a per country basis.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So, for example, you sometimes see things from the BBC go out in America but not in Canada, or they might go worldwide, except for, it really depends on what licenses are out there. Netflix Canada, however, had a different reply.
Right.
They said, because we're the gay one, is why there's a difference. And now this is in line with brands having a sort of tongue-in-cheek personality on Twitter. It's almost, you don't do Twitter. No, you do Twitter, don't you?
I only follow Twitter feeds that make me laugh. So I know about Wendy's. Apparently the Wendy's Twitter feed, all they do is insult their customers, but in a way that brings joy to people's lives.
Well, it's the idea of Twitter is the sassy version of all of the brands. Well, Netflix Canada has posts like, my favorite movie genre is Chris Hemsworth shirtless.
Okay.
They also posted images from Riverdale and...
Yeah, because they're queer positive. That makes them different from America.
So we're the gay one.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It is just a brand trying to give itself a bit of an edge. And the real reason is movie and TV licensing differences. But I don't know. I thought it was an interesting Canadian story.
That still doesn't explain why they don't show more Canadian content, though.
Well, I think that is a very good discussion to have. I know that, for example, community radio, I think 30% of all music content has to be CanCon, which is why we're playing Ariane Moffat on Conte Perret later on in today's show. And I know that, for example, Bell and Rogers, the big T, and Vidrotron in Quebec, they all have to create Canadian programming and play pro Canadian programming.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But Netflix not only doesn't charge HST, so there's no money to the government in taxes, but there's also no money, there's no minimum set for Canadian production. They do Canadian production. Mm-hmm. They have made quite a few programs in Canada.
Okay.
But in fact, Riverdale, one of their big hits, is made in BC.
But do they call it BC?
They call it
Riverdale.
It's set in Riverdale, but it's all filmed around BC in the Vancouver area.
This is one of the things that I really like about season 4 of Letterkenny, and this is something that didn't even occur to me until I saw an interview with the creator of the show, that it was the first time in TV history that there was a regular TV show, not a movie, not an art house movie, a TV show that happened in Ontario, and they called it Ontario, in the winter, and they film outside. It's just really rare. But then I actually remembered there was one season of Orphan Black where they were actually in the suburbs. They were in Vaughan in winter, but it was like 2 episodes total. I know filming in winter, everybody avoids it as much as possible because snow on the ground, not good for the cameras. But still, I mean, it was a really, really, really good thing there.
So we're going to introduce our first song. This one is by Ariane Moffat. This is De Souffle Pour Deux.
Du souffle pour deux.
I was nowhere near there.
Hard to translate. A breath for two, or breathing for two, or the act of breathing where two people are doing it. It's ambiguous in French. But
it's a new track from Mario Moffat who...
It definitely involves two people breathing, though. I can tell you that.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back. Let us know what you think, and we'll be back just after this.
Résiste à la noirceur refroidi, je resterai ici. J'ai du souffle pour
welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And we are excited to keep talking about gay stuff.
Are we?
I could talk about gay stuff all day, every day. It's true.
I don't know if I could. As you know, if you know me well, I would eventually get distracted by like metallurgy or the Mariana Trench or space travel or like tidal power plants squirrels. Or squirrels, we would be talking about gay stuff and then I would start talking about economic modeling and
we actually record for around 6 hours and then I clip out all of the asides. All right, I want to talk about a really good friend of ours, Maurice Tomlinson. You are aware of this fabulous man.
Oh, yes, yes.
He lives in, I can't remember if they're in Rochester, New York, or in Toronto now, but they're in the area. And
they move around a bit, according to what they're doing.
Maurice Tomlinson co-founded Montego Bay Pride, Montego Bay being in Jamaica.
Right.
Now, the biggest entertainment online, and I think they might be print, magazine for Jamaica, ran an article,
mm-hmm.
which in itself is a big deal, on LGBT members and LGBT pride, talking about Montego Bay Pride. Right. So this is really big news. This is pretty important stuff that, you know, the media is talking in a positive light.
Right.
Bearing in mind that a couple of years ago, Jamaica, they ran stories of just newspapers ran pages and pages of names, faces, mm-hmm. accused homosexual.
Yeah.
And people were getting beaten up and kind of really put their lives in danger. So this kind of positive coverage is really great.
Right.
It talks about the fact that they're trying to have more people come to Montego Bay Pride, which is coming up soon. I don't think I'll be there.
No.
Because I don't think I can get there. But
and they're within the torrid zone, so the seasons are different.
Absolutely.
That's between the Cancer, the Tropic of
this
Cancer.
This is one of those digressions we mentioned earlier.
Capricorn, and it's in the middle, so they don't four seasons.
We're going to dive back to the gay stuff. And it's really great news that Montego Bay in Jamaica is going from strength to strength. I think we're seeing people across the world slowly evolving on LGBT rights, which is really great stuff.
I think I remember hearing a story that it was about 10, 15 years ago where when the police found out about Pride, they confronted the organizers and the organizers said, you know, yeah, we're doing this thing. And the police said, well, we will back you up and protect you during Pride. But what they actually did is they just waited for Pride to start until everybody was there. And then they just cleared house and arrested everyone. So I think that was Maurice telling me about that. And I think it was Montego Bay Pride where that happened. So it was, if they're talking about this sort of thing positively, that alone is a huge change from 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I know that in Montego Bay, people still wear masks to help shield their identities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that's an important piece. Of course, Pride has a really strong history of that. Mardi Gras in Sydney, there's a great film that's based on the true events called Riot that came out a little while ago that talks about the founding of Mardi Gras in Sydney, and people were encouraged to dress in drag, put a wig on, wear a mask, mm-hmm. so that you couldn't lose your job at work the next day, you wouldn't have your kids taken off you, that it created this sense of security. So now, talking about countries slowly moving together on gay rights, I want to talk about another film. And this film is called Rafiki. It means friend in Swahili. And it is actually featuring in the New Fest lineup for the 30th Film Festival. It's an LGBT film festival. And it's actually kicking off their gala night as the international centerpiece. But what's really... I mean, it's up against like Bar Your Race, which I talked about before. That's the debut by Troye Sivan,
right.
About the gay conversion therapy camp. But yeah, that's... So Rafiki is about a Kenyan couple, a lesbian couple, who fall in love, and it's all about their struggles and the violence and the physical violence and discrimination that they face within their community. Now, this film has a little bit of Oscar buzz.
Ooh!
I mean, I saw the trailer, and it was very... very engaging. I was like, I'm gonna watch this film.
Oh yeah?
And I can't say that for all films, but for this one, I was like, I'm gonna watch this film. And the new Mary Poppins, I'm also gonna watch. And the new Harry Potter Fantastic Beasts.
And
this one.
Movie about the making of Mary Poppins as well. That's also a movie that's out.
Yeah, but that's not a new one. That's been out for a while.
The woman who wrote the book that the movie's based on apparently hated the movie profoundly. So
yeah. Anyway. But there's a new Mary Poppins. But that's not what we're talking about.
Unrelated.
We're talking about Rafiki.
Right.
Now, for Oscars, it would have been potentially winning the Best Foreign Film Award.
Okay.
Now, however, to qualify for Best Foreign Film, you have to have been a film in your said foreign land for it to work. But Kenya, in its infinite wisdom, decided that a film where two women fall in love is just so gosh damn blasphemous that the people of Kenya couldn't possibly have their eyes corrupted by such an image.
Right.
And they banned it.
Okay.
Which means it wouldn't be eligible.
Right.
Now, Kenya doesn't often have the opportunity of Oscar buzz. They're not a huge movie-making country. It's, it's not like the amount of movies out of Canada or Britain.
Oh, that's not true. That is not true. Kenya is actually one of the world's largest movie industries. They just don't export.
Well, I correct that then. There's not a huge number of exported Kenyan there movies with an Oscar buzz. So what the Kenyan Film Board did, I think it was actually a court decision in Kenya, is to temporarily lift the ban.
Right.
Just they're just hitching up the skirt a little bit so you can see a glimpse of the ankle. So that it counts for Oscar nomination purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to ban it again.
Right, okay.
But in that 2 weeks,
right,
every single theatre in Kenya that is showing it sold out immediately. In fact, several of them have extended the numbers of screenings and screening rooms to accommodate the demand.
But only during those 2 weeks.
Because otherwise it's been banned. apparently it started to show there and people are booing the 18 plus warning at the front of the movie. Apparently people are getting quite into it, really showing their support. And I think this speaks to what government think is important, and maybe what critics say important, what's the people talking to media say is important.
Yeah.
And then what the people on the street are saying, you know.
Yeah.
And I think we saw that with Crazy Rich Asians. They were like, this is an important movie. And everyone's like, okay, good on you.
Yeah.
Rich Asian people are buying out movie theaters so that, you know, to really demonstrate the impact. And it was the number one blockbuster for several weeks. It earned an astonishing amount of money.
Right.
And I think that's where people really were like, no, we want this. This is what we want. And we will prove it with all of our money. And in Kenya, this is a clear symbol to the Kenyan Film Board, the Kenyan government, that they're actually quite capable of dealing with the outrageous thought of two women falling in love with each other.
And I'm willing to bet that in the movie they hold hands and they look at each other for
or glance at each other cautiously across the room or something. Yeah,
for more than 5 seconds consecutively.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sex scenes, so that's also a complaint about the 18 plus rating, is that it's just because they're two women falling in love, but you know, there's no. It's sort of a PG-13 movie.
Yeah,
you know, there's no reason why.
Or it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, I thought that was pretty cool news coming out of Kenya that actually it immediately sold out. So more fool you, Kenyan Film Board.
Well, yeah, the story is really about the film board. I mean, the movie sounds good, but like movies like this come out often, but they don't generate this kind of a really bizarre buzz.
So I want to talk about a quick story before we move on. And it's about the Archbishop of Chicago.
What a weird thing to be Archbishop of.
Chicago?
Yes.
I feel like a lot of big cities have archbishops.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. I feel like you knew that in your heart. In your heart, you knew that. The reason why I'm talking about this is that in Avondale, there was a Reverend Paul Kalchick. Now, he said, this guy used to be in a church, and this church wanted to welcome more LGBT people. It's a Catholic church.
Okay.
So the previous reverend bought some flags and some bunting and gayed up the place a little bit as a bit of a gesture, being like, just come and seek God, drink the wine, eat the bread.
That sort of thing,
create a nice welcoming space. Mm-hmm. And then he left.
Okay.
And then this Reverend Paul Kalchick came in and immediately binned most of said things.
Okay, okay.
But a while later, he realized that, gosh darn it, underneath the stack of Bibles was the pride flag.
Mm-hmm.
And he just had forgotten about it. So there's only really one thing to do, which is to exorcise it and burn it in flames.
Okay.
Because what other reasonable human being would dispose of a pride flag? Like, what can one do with this item?
Exorcise a flag.
So, yeah, he asked his archbishop. The archbishop said no.
Yeah, okay.
And the Reverend Paul Kalchick did it anyway.
Right.
And he has now been removed promptly from said church.
Okay, okay.
So we know that he's been removed to receive pastoral support and make sure that his needs can be assessed. Essentially, either he's being told off sternly for not listening and doing as he's told, which I think may be more to the case. But it's kind of ridiculous that there is just a reverend who feels that the only solution is to literally set it on fire. And apparently, he was planning to have a big event, invite all the parishes to come and watch as they burn down this flag.
Okay.
But then the archbishop said, that's a dreadful idea. And he's like, okay. I'll only tell some of my closest friends and I'll burn it on a different day. Is that okay? I mean, the answer is still no. And he did it anyway.
Did he do it out of doors at least? Because most flags are made out of synthetic materials. If he burned it indoors, it would have just been a face full of burning plastic. And that's, I mean, that would be kind of funny. But, you know, I have concerns, you know, about burning synthetic materials where there's no proper ventilation. It's a ridiculous story. I don't know how to take it seriously. I'm sorry. I feel like I should be taking it seriously, but I just can't.
It's hard to say. Apparently there are other things involved why he's been asked to step down.
Well, you would think so.
Yeah, but I think the fact that
it doesn't sound like the kind of person who does just one weird thing.
I mean, even though it was a very weird thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it led to protests, some tepid signs of support. But, you know, it's a bit ridiculous. I mean, one of the parishes says, you know, it's what he believed in. It was his opinion. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. He's not against anybody. But, you know, if you burnt an American flag in a church in Chicago, there'd be riots on the street.
You know, burning flags in America, they have very strong opinions about that. Like a lot of the rest of the world, like a flag drops in the ground and people go, whoopsie daisies. But like flags have a big meaning in America. Mm. So I mean, like in the context of Chicago, absolutely, this has more weight.
The Pride flag is not a country.
Right.
You know, service members from the armed forces haven't died for gay Utonia at the time. There's not quite the same meaning, but there are a lot of LGBT people where that has very significant meaning to them.
Yeah, and flags in general have more weight in the States.
I don't want to create a direct comparison. But I wanted to really... Anyway, he could have just donated it to like a gay thing in Chicago.
Or just put it in a bin and not tell anyone at all that he had done that.
Like it's... But why? I mean, it just seems silly. Anyway, that's whatever.
I mean, I found old stuff among my things where I go, whoa.
You know what?
Put it in a black garbage bag so that nobody knows I have it.
You know, when I was in Wales, we had an old cottage that was built in the 1800s in our garden. It was a tiny garden.
Right.
Maybe like 300 square feet with a giant cottage in the middle of it.
Okay.
There was only 300 square feet of garden around this cottage. It was really small.
When you say cottage, do you mean like shed?
No, like a cottage, two rooms,
a kitchen.
Yeah,
okay. Probably had
stairs built onto the outside going upstairs. Okay. Two rooms upstairs. It was a cottage.
Okay.
But it was really old and the city got built around it.
Okay.
But in this cottage was a pile of books, including several Bibles. And I'm like, I don't know what one does with old Bibles.
Right.
Because you can't, it doesn't seem right to chuck them out.
Okay.
And as a gay man, I still wouldn't like set it on fire in an exorcism of gayness. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, people have respect for symbols that mean significant things. And I just am perplexed by his decision to do this.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to try and unperplex ourselves as we take another quick song break. This is Cote Perrette with a brand new track as well. Both of them are brand new. Both of them are French. And they both came out relatively close to the same time. I mean, for me, the title looks like Combustible.
Yeah.
I feel like I should just say that with a French accent.
Combustible's fine.
Combustible. Was that not good? We'll find out.
Combustible?
There we go. And we'll be back just after
this. In French, they would just say flammable. I'm pretty sure. Whatever. It's all good.
On s'est rencontrés. J'étais plutôt fragile. Les étoiles s'enlisaient dans la forme de nos yeux. J'étais bien une usée de mensonges fabuleux. Et tu m'as enlevé des profondeurs, des creux. Mais je t'ai averti. Des monstres se cachent au fond de mon cœur qui se mue en moi. Mais libre d'esprit, en secret et je prie que mon double enfin ne se libère pas. Et laisse donc tomber le soir, celui qui me fait rentrer toujours plus tard.
Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
Now, gay star news. We've cited them a few times there. I mean, I'm on the fence as to their reliability.
Right.
I think they're an American one. But they did a survey of 3,000 people. Actually, Gay Star News is British, much like PinkNews.co.uk.
Okay.
And they teamed up with Barclays to do their Founders Day. It was earlier in the week or last week, and it was on the 24th of September. And it was a celebration of people who helped to found the gay pride movement.
Okay.
I think it's a fantastic idea. It created a stage and an opportunity to really amplify the incredible contribution of people to gay rights and so on. Because these are people who either recently passed away or in their older stages of life. And you know, we're going to lose these great folks quite soon.
And they were doing it when it was really dangerous.
Absolutely.
Really dangerous.
Well, one of their speakers was Sandy Toksvig. Now, Sandy Toksvig is an openly lesbian presenter. She's presenting the Great British Bake Off. She presents QI, which is one of my favorite shows. And did you know that she gets paid 25% or a third, I forget which, of Stephen Fry's pay.
Yeah.
Which is just...
I mean, the weird thing about pay differences and pay gaps is you could say, like, well, you know, Stephen Fry is doing other things, so he's indirectly promoting. So that would account for, like, she makes 90% what he does. Maybe. But 20 or... I thought it was 40%. But anything less than 60%, actually, anything less than 95% is pretty weird.
Well, I mean, I get that he'd been doing it for many, many seasons. Yeah. And if you have an annual pay increase, I can see it. But also the audience of the show grew with it. Stepping into it. I mean, it's outrageous that she gets paid.
There's a whole bunch of reasons why she could get paid less, but that's... that's not a reasonable margin.
No, it is very shocking. Yeah. Anyway, she wasn't talking about that, but she was talking about the gay rights movement, and she was telling a great story about John and Roger. And I think in this story, a gentleman called John died, and he was very likely to die. So Roger, his partner at the time, reached out to his estranged family.
Right.
Because it was back in the day when being gay was not totally an okay thing to do.
Right.
But he wanted to let the family know that, you know, your son is going to pass, and you know, your brother is going to pass.
Yeah, yeah.
So he reached out to the family, and when they got there, they instructed the hospital staff to deny him access.
The partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't tell him where the funeral was, so John had no idea when he died, where he was buried, if he was buried or cremated.
Yeah.
And yeah, an act of kindness at the end of his lover of oh so many years, his life was cruelly just stolen away from him by a vengeful family, essentially. Yeah. But that was not an uncommon story.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not uncommon to, there are Canadians that can also,
because the next common step, because I've heard this story before, the next common step is that after the partner passes away, the family gets into the house and clears it out of all their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no court there to say, no, no, that dresser wasn't his. They just take whatever it is that they spot that they want. And then there's nothing that anyone can do about it. So, I mean, this kind of story, thankfully, stopped happening in the 90s. At least it stopped happening with any degree of legal support.
Yeah, in Canada, when gay rights and became to come out, and spousal rights were being recognized. And so, I mean, we've had gay marriage in this country for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's
more than 10.
More than 10. Yeah. But I mean, that's not an awful lot of time. Mm-hmm. You know, there are somebody, I'm sure somebody listening has an iPod older than that, you know.
Yeah.
It certainly makes you stop and think. Sandy Toksvig was being honored as an LGBT rights founder.
Yeah.
And she's like, but I'm not that old.
Yeah.
You know, don't dig the grave too deep just yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's still work to be done. I think it's a great idea. But one of the things that Gay Star News did was that they surveyed about 3,000 people to find out about ageism in the gay community.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they found was something about around 30% of people in this survey.
Yeah. And 3,000 people is a good set. That is a significant set.
They asked about, you know, do you lie about your age on an app?
Yeah.
For example, Grindr.
Yeah.
And about a third of them said every single time.
Yeah.
And the main reason given was
ageism. Yeah.
You know, do you lie about your age on dates? 40% were like, yeah, every single time. 39% were like, yeah, every single time. And that's sort of being consistent. And it's typical of older people who just get ignored off the bat. You know, I think I see, you see people on hookup apps where they're like, no one over 24. And I'm like, why did you pick that number? Like, what happens at 24 that is just a mystical shifting of the balances?
No, it's what happens at 25. Because it's 24 or older would include 24, but over 24 starts at 25.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's like at 25 you become dead.
Know your math. But yeah, no, it's a real thing. Yeah.
Until you go all the way to like, if you look like Anderson Cooper and Alice Silver Fox, you get like a old person pass.
You get an extension.
Yeah. But it is astonishing. And when we look at rates of isolationism, the rates of loneliness in the gay community, it truly is shocking. We're working on getting some guests in to talk about loneliness in the gay community, to really explore this topic in a lot more detail. But I thought that was really interesting that in an effort to promote these amazing people who've done so much for gay rights, what this news organization discovered was that really the amount of ageism against older folks who did a lot of this work is truly, truly astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Not surprising, but maybe just more disappointing.
Yeah.
Not good.
No, yeah, no.
We're going to play out with Cher with a not very giggly song, but it is another one that's been released from
the ABBA album.
From the ABBA album, and it's her cover of One of Us, which is a bit sad, but it's Cher and ABBA combined, so it can't really get that sad because it's just impossible. There are too many glittery rhinestones to allow that to happen. Anyways, I've been Luke Smith.
I have been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
They passed me by, all of those great romances. You were, I felt, robbing me of my rightful chances. My picture clear, everything seemed so easy. And so I dealt you the blow, one of us had to go. But now it's different, I want you to know. One of us is crying, one of us is lying in her lonely bed, staring at the ceiling, wishing she was somewhere. She had never left at all. I saw myself as a concealed attraction. I felt you kept me away from the heat and the action. Just like a child, stubborn and misconceived, that's how I started the show. One of us had to go. Now I've changed and I want you to know. One of us is crying, one of us is lying in her lonely bed, staring at the sea, wishing she was somewhere else instead. And one of us is lonely, one of us is only waiting for a call. Sorry for herself, feeling stupid, feeling small, wishing she had never left at all.